Welcome to the Lost Library, Seeker. Enjoy your stay. Hi, I'm Matt, the host of Lost Library and your Game Master here on Grayscale. You can find me on Twitter, at Matt Hoadley, and you can find all of my projects at fifthstraw.com.
Hi, my name is Alice Joram, and I play Aisha Eidolon, your ghost friend. You can find me on Twitter at Alice Joram, and my portfolio on ArtStation at artstation.com/AliceJoram. If you own a VR headset, you can play my game on Steam. Look for The Red Stare. It's free.
Hey, I'm Emmeline, or Emma, and you can find me on Twitter at Of Hauntings.
Hey, I'm Joe. I play on Bainbridge. You can find me on Twitter at TheJoeHadfield. I also do a podcast with Travis called WTF Anime.
Hi, I'm Travis, and today I'll be playing Cole Cameron.
You can also find me on Twitter at DiceLobbard.
So, Aisha, you're the first one to step into the car, and I'm sure you've been in cars before. You've been in Lori's car. You know what the inside of a car looks like.
She knows what the inside of a limo looks like.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure you rode around in some that had some really heavily tinted glass.
Probably, yeah.
You were not prepared for there to be kind of a broad, open outdoor space inside of this limo. Everything's kind of a blue-gray color. There was a wall of fog kind of a couple yards out from you in every direction. You are on a road.
Oh, fuck, that's neat. It's like when you're in a loading screen in Assassin's Creed.
Yeah, almost exactly like kind of that same weird space.
Aisha says that.
Oh, that's very good, Aisha. I love that. As you're saying that, coming down the road towards you is a shadowy shape, and a voice kind of coming from everywhere laughs at your line and just says, "Well, some people dream about this space. Some people who are a little bit more in touch with the spiritual than others are."
Would you say you couldn't be? Is it even possible to be in touch with the spiritual when you are the spiritual?
Oh, Aisha, you are nothing but spirit.
That actually kind of sounds like a compliment. Thank you, stranger.
Someday you're going to properly take the journey that all mortals take, and you and I are going to sit down and have a chat. I imagine you're going to have plenty of stories for me. Unfortunately, that's not today. You are going to go back. But that means, like everyone else who's trod through my realm, you have to take a test.
Okay. It's kind of a weird thing to make someone do when they're doing a job for you, but sure.
Oh, no, that's one of my Reapers. They're acting on their own initiative. It's, something's happening over in my realm proper, and they're quite right, they do need help. They just didn't understand that I wouldn't give you four a free pass.
I mean, you do understand that if you're middle management and you hire someone, that person is still also employed by the CEO, right? That's kind of how that goes, I think. I mean, to be fair, I have never had a job, but I think that's how it goes.
Oh, you kind of have a job dealing with all sorts of apocalyptic things, but I take your point. They probably should have asked, and I probably should have informed them better, but you stay alive for eternity and you get a little bored. Anyway, how about a test?
Yeah, go ahead. I'm ready. Do I need a pen?
I don't think so, but let's wait and see. And the figure that's walking towards you solidifies and steps into the onto the road, out of the shadows, and you recognize this person. I would like you to describe Seth the mailman.
Okay. I've been imagining Seth as kind of like a lanky, sort of mid-20s black man with a big poof of hair. And kind of, I think he has like tattoos on both of his arms, but a bit of a dandy style clothing in whatever way like a mailman can do that. Kind of like, oh, I have to wear this uniform, but I'm going to make it stylish.
Very nice. He walks up and just stops dead in his tracks when he sees you and just goes, I died and I still cannot get away from you.
Seth? Wow. Hey, how have you been?
Dead?
I mean, yes, but I mean, it could still be nice.
It's maybe? It's not bad. Bet you, you're a ghost type, you already know this, but they have me running mail here on the other side now, too.
Oh, wow. Okay. I mean, do you still get paid?
We operate on a alternative revenue scheme, but, you know, it's still rewarding in its own right.
You know, I feel like I just met your boss, and I'm all sort of also doing a job for them, and they also are making me do a test, so it's kind of a weird employment situation. I don't think that's usually how it goes, so that sounds par for the course.
He scratches his head a little bit, looks at you, and goes, well, you know, I hear rumors on this job, Aisha. Apparently there's something wrong with the whole getting to heaven or hell part of the equation. Like, people die and their spirits go over to our side, to the spiritual plane, but they don't get to go on to a afterlife or anything. They just, the ones that move on from the spirit world just kind of are in limbo or something.
I think I heard about this, yeah. I think that's kind of the thing that we're trying to solve in the long run, though I admit the few things I've done so far haven't really seemed that related. Is that what's happening to you?
Oh, no, no. I wasn't quite ready for all that yet. He holds up a hand and you see kind of a ring, just a wedding band on it. He just goes, I have some family still in Port Avalon, and I wanted to stick around and make sure they were all right, as much as I could. And, I mean, I promised my wife I wouldn't just leave her all alone, so I'm sticking around until it's her time.
Oh, you're always so loyal. I always like that about you.
It's what I try for.
It's really nice to see you. I've been doing really well, actually. I am going to college, and I'm doing pretty good in college. And I made some friends that I actually see in person that aren't just you. Yeah.
He slaps his mailbag that's kind of slung around about waist level and goes, well, if that don't beat all, a ghost with friends going to college. Oh, well, Aisha, I dearly wish I could just sit around and chat, but unfortunately, I am part of the test.
Wait, I wanted to ask you something. Can I ask you something?
He just pauses and looks up and goes, that all right, sir? And the voice goes, yeah, this should be interesting.
Okay. I always wondered, and did I get you killed?
Seth just looks at you, and it's, you were used to seeing, like, just a little bit of terror on his face kind of all the time. you weren't ever really used to seeing just like genuine concern. Like it would show up occasionally, but he just looks at you and it's just this warm grandfatherly look. And he just goes, "Oh, Asha, your father, bless him."
Don't bless him. He doesn't deserve that.
Well, yeah, you're probably right, but he threatened me just the once, and no, honey, you didn't have anything to do with me dying. That was just my body gave out.
That's immensely relieving.
Well,
I've been worried about that.
Oh, don't you worry about me. Listen, tell you what. After this, talk to your friend Friday. She knows how to do seance-y things. You ever want to talk again, maybe she can give you a lesson or something. And maybe I can pop over and we can chat later more. But right now, and he opens his bag and digs in, and he pulls out three envelopes. And he hands them to you.
Oh, thank you.
He says, all right, now I got to go on my rounds. I think the test is about to start for you. And he, like, tilts his hat to you and walks off whistling. And the voice returns and says, "He's a good one, Seth is. Take a look at those envelopes for me, Aisha."
Okay, I'll just look at them in turn.
Okay. They say they each are kind of the same. It's a kind of a bigger, heavier material envelope. All three of them are. They seem to be just kind of a cream color, and written on them in, well, you're not sure what color it is. It could be the current setting, or it could be just something to do with the nature of the envelopes or the inks themselves. The color seems to just kind of keep rotating through some different shades. But they each have just one name on them. The names are Milo, November, and Shandy.
Oh, I can deliver two of these, I think. I don't know the third one.
Well, you're going to deliver one of them. This is the test. You get to choose one of these envelopes to stay with you. For you to deliver in person. Then you'll choose another one to open and read, but never deliver. And the third one, I keep.
So the one I read, I can't just, like, deliver it orally?
You'll have to make that decision once you know what's in them.
Okay.
Let me add a wrinkle to this, Aisha. Each one of these is information that the recipient dearly needs to know. Which one do you keep? Which one do you read? And which one stays with me?
It's probably safest if I read Shandy's because I can talk to her all the time. I should probably keep the November one because I don't know who that is, so I could ask around and deliver it. But Milo probably needs to know that, though. But if I take it home, then Molly will see it, and I have to explain that. Do I even want to give Milo anything at the moment? I'd like to keep the November one and read the one to Shandy.
All right. And the Milo envelope pops out of existence. You're kind of immediately, as soon as you say your answer, you kind of get like almost like a data dump into your brain. And you get this image of who November is and, like, almost like Google Map directions to know how to get to her.
Does Seth get this all the time? It's really useful.
Oh, he has a direct line. Now, why don't you crack open that note to Shandy?
Okay. Aisha rummages in like a back pocket and pulls out a dagger and rips open the letter.
The envelope just kind of fades away, and you're left holding a like custom-made paper. It's heavy weight. You have to unfold it, and there's this flowing script in kind of that same rotating color of ink. Doesn't look like the same handwriting. Looks like different handwriting. You can read it pretty easily, which is weird because none of the letters quite look right. What sort of information does Aisha have on other languages? What kind of other scripts might she recognize?
Scripts.
Like alphabets, things like that.
Yeah, I'm thinking. I think she speaks a number of languages, but I think the only other script that she can read would be Farsi.
Okay. So you don't know what these letters are, but you can still read it. And it says, "Dear Mother, it's probably going to be a long winter before I get to see you again. And it's gonna be a rough one by all accounts. I'm safe. I'm doing fine. My husband sends his regards. Hopefully, if everything y'all are working with there goes well, I'll be able to come see you in the spring. Love, Purse."
Oh. She'll probably be really happy to hear this. It's a bit personal, but it's probably better if I deliver it and then she hears it than if I don't deliver it and she doesn't hear it. Yeah, okay. Thank you.
The voice comes back and just goes, "You're quite welcome. You're right. That is pretty personal. Maybe don't share that with anyone else. I would consider it a personal favor if you kept that just to you and Shandy. Well, time for you to get on with things." And there's like a clap and a white flash, and that's where we're going to leave Aisha.
Wait, was that a test? It was more of a Pokemon situation.
So Friday, you step into the chauffeur's limo, and instead of seeing the inside of a car or, you know, Aisha, who got in before you, you find yourself standing in kind of just a bluish field. Everything's kind of a shade of kind of gray blue. Off kind of around you, a couple yards out in every direction, is this kind of wall of fog with the hint of some trees scattered throughout. And approaching is a human shape coming out of the fog directly ahead of you.
I think Friday is like, she's just kind of stunned. Like, she's stunned by like everything that's been happening for the last like bit here, but like, I don't think she has any verbal reaction. She just kind of like stays where she is and tries to survey the situation.
Okay, very good. So the figure is approaching. Before it gets to you, I would like you to give me a weird roll, please.
That is an 11.
An 11, okay. So there's a couple of things that you notice about this place. One, kind of the first thing is nothing around here, nothing seems real. Like, you know you're standing on the ground, but you can't really feel it. There's obviously gravity because you're not just floating away. Nothing kind of feels right to you, and you feel more solid than you had previously. Like, here in the world, you don't really kind of acknowledge that, hey, like, I am a solid being, because that's just the state of existence you're in. Just kind of all the time. It's not weird or unusual. It just is. Where you're at now, you're aware of being, like, overly solid.
Huh, interesting.
Like, yeah, it's just kind of like you're almost like you became super dense, but that's not really it. It's a very odd feeling. The other thing that you notice right off the bat is something you hadn't really been able to put your finger on before. Ever since you did that ritual with where you were given the book and you made friends with Ben, who really is trying despite everything, and you've been carrying that rock around with you, there had been kind of like a low-level hum kind of at the back of your head, just kind of in the back of your mind, just kind of rattling around a little bit. And that's not there anymore. And it took to this moment for you to be like, oh, weird, that's been there for a while.
Oh, man. No, I think, yeah, no, she's like, that's weird. But also, like, she feels definitely, like, super alone because that was, like, probably, like, a slightly comforting presence, even if he's not very helpful all the time.
But he's like, a good kid, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. So this figure is approaching, and it stops just kind of at the edge of the fog. You still can't really see any features. And a voice just kind of rumbles through this entire space. It's a kind of a low bass voice and just goes, well, 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 who are you then? You're still alive and coming over to my realm? Interesting.
This wasn't my idea. I just got into the cab or the car.
A Reaper brought you here?
Yeah, yeah. I'm with him. I don't know where... I'm not here alone. I'm not, like, trying to do anything.
Oh, come now, Friday. Just because you're here alone doesn't mean you're not brought here for a reason. I'm surprised the Reapers are showing such initiative. Now, let me see. And you feel like a wave kind of wash over you. It's not anything super tangible. It's just kind of like a, almost like a radar pulse just kind of made manifest. It's kind of this wave of perception washes out from this shape. And you hear this low chuckle kind of surrounding you again. And it doesn't. It's not malevolent, but it kind of makes your skin crawl a little bit. And the voice just kind of returns and says, okay, well, if you want to progress through to my realm, I suppose you'll have to take the test. Just like every mortal before you. Ah, I love this part. Let's do this, shall we?
A test? What kind of test?
Oh, it's nothing too bad. You just have to, let's see. For you, you just have to confront a fear.
the color leaves her face. More than so than it already has.
Are you ready to begin, Friday?
I guess so. Sure.
Let's proceed. And the shape ahead of you separates into two human shapes. And they step out of the shadow. And you can recognize them. And I want you to describe James and Sarah Dunn.
Oh, Lord. So James and Sarah, they are Friday's parents, and they died, I think it was a couple years ago now, and they died pretty young. They were probably young 30s, and they, you can definitely see, like,
where she got like all of her features. Like her dad has the same like kind of like floppy hair and like it's the same color and everything, and she's got her mom's nose, and like they're so obviously painfully her parents. It's a lot for her to take in right now.
And how is she taking this in?
Oh, very bad. She like drops to her knees, like just with the shock of it all, and like tears are welling up in her eyes, and she's like, Mom, Dad?
And your mother answers you. Friday, honey, is that you?
This isn't real. You guys are dead. What's happening? What's going on?
And your father just kind of smiles at you, a very familiar, reassuring smile. It was the oh, you had a nightmare smile.
Oh.
And they both just keep walking towards you and just go, well, yeah, we're dead. This is real, I suppose. In as much as anything off the mortal plane is real. But honey, what are you doing here?
She tries to kind of like compose herself a little bit, and like I'm here on a job. I'm trying to help a reaper. I don't understand why you guys are. I've been looking for you guys for so long.
Oh, honey. We were always looking out for you. Apparently the line to get on to the next life is a little long at the moment, so we decided to hang around. Keep an eye on our baby girl.
Can she give him a hug?
She will try
for sure.
It's a little strange. It's not quite a physical presence that you're hugging, but you feel their arms go around you. You feel them leaning into you a little bit. And as y'all are hugging, the voice comes back. Well, now, Friday, look at this. You've found your parents again. And you've won some important knowledge, haven't you?
Yeah, is this the test? I'm confused.
Oh, no, this is the prep for the test. The test starts now. The job the Reaper wants you to do is very important, Friday. There's something causing trouble in my realm, and he needs your help to fix it. But no one crosses into the spiritual plane without paying a price. So, Friday, here's your test. Do you want to continue on doing the Reaper's job, or do you want to keep the knowledge that your parents are actively watching over you and go home?
She kind of squeaks a little, like she makes some sort of noise that like just she doesn't really know how to respond. She's just like, I've been looking for them, I mean, for years. I can't give that up.
Oh, come now, Friday. Orpheus lost his wife because he couldn't make a choice. It's time to choose the world or your happiness, Friday.
She kind of like turns back into the hug with her parents, trying to like seek some sort of comfort, even though it's kind of weird and not quite there like she wants it to be. And she kind of talks to her parents again and says, like, I don't know what to do. I'm sorry. I just want to help you guys, but I don't know.
Your father just kind of ruffles your hair like he used to do and just kind of leans into you and says, Friday, we are so very proud of you. And just because you won't remember it doesn't mean we're going to stop watching.
Oh, she's definitely like full out crying. And she gives him a tighter hug, as she tries at least. Sniffles a lot and tries to compose herself and tries to stay in the moment as long as she possibly can, before like turning back around to the figure or the voice or whatever, and like, I choose the world. I have to.
Your mom and dad walk up on either side of you, flanking you, facing the kind of the source of this voice. They both put their arms around you, and your mom leans into you and says, "We're very proud of you, sweetheart. Now go make us the proudest parents ever." And there's a flash of light followed by that laughter. And that's where we're going to leave Friday.
Oh, poor baby. Oh, my God. Ugh.
Hey, everybody. Matt, your host and DM, popping in here for your mid-episode break on this, just this very self-exploratory podcast episode this week. I hope y'all had enjoyed this. We saw an opportunity to dig into some individual characters and see just what it is that's going on with them. And I think it turned out great. We have just a rocky time for our final two. And I can't wait for y'all to hear it. It should be, I don't want to say fun, because, you know, tears and trauma, but good. It's all very, very good. So, real quick here. Our music is Agra by Damiano Baldoni off of the album Lost Dynasty, which can be found at the Free Music Archive. Our recap is done by Renee Rhodes at RadianR on Twitter. And you can find her podcast, Fate and the Fable Maidens, at FateFMcast. And you should definitely be giving that a listen. Our High Tide recommendation, once again, is the Extra Life charity. And if y'all missed it last week, we are gonna play just that same interview clip with Travis, so enjoy hearing what's going on with Extra Life. So I'm here with our cast member Travis, who's here to tell us all about what we're kind of promoting this month for our High Tide recommendation. Travis, what are we talking about?
This month, instead of a podcast, we're backing a charity, and it's one that I've been involved with now for, I want to say, 5 years. That would be Extra Life.
Oh, cool. I've heard a little bit about Extra Life from some charity streams I've seen, but why don't you tell us what Extra Life is all about?
Okay. Extra Life is all about gamers, whether they be tabletop or video, coming together to raise money for the Children's Miracle Network. And I know one of the things that really appealed to me when I first signed up is when you are helping them out, it just, you can dog ear your money. So, like, everything that my local team is doing is going to our local Children's Miracle Network hospital.
Okay, that's a really cool thing. Like, being able to just know where the money you're raising is going, that's a real cool thing that this charity's doing.
Yeah, I always thought it was cool that we got to dog ear it, but since I am here, if you like what we do, I'd like to invite you to, if you're not going to participate, hey, back me. Help raise some money for kids.
So if someone wants to do that, how do they? How do they do that?
Well, if you want to register your own team or you want to donate to me or my team specifically, what you're going to do is go to the website, which is extra-life.org. And from there, if you want to donate to me, you can search me up, Travis Thomas. I'm with Team Kidical Success. Or you can log in and register yourself as a participant and do your own thing.
Oh, that's very cool. If you're not going to make a team yourself, please absolutely go back Travis, go support his team. If you want to try to find something that to join that's in your local area, do that. Just Extra Life is a really great way for people in our hobby to share the love around, and that's really cool. So
it is. I want to say once a year they have their huge 24-hour event where you're up the entire time playing games. This year it's on November 3rd, so there's still time to register and get a team together. But if you happen to be in Ohio or just feel like traveling and want to come to All-American Cards and Comics in Boardman, Ohio on November 3rd, I will be there 24 hours, delirious, rolling dice and mumbling to myself. So come say hi.
Oh, that sounds really cool. Anyone in that area, please go check that out. And hey, share the love around. Support Extra Life. Support some of these kids.
Yeah. Be excellent to each other.
To study mythology is to study the biggest of boys.
And Kratos becomes as big as Ares? Because the power to kill a god is him big?
Pod of Lore, a podcast about video games and mythology. Available every Friday, wherever your podcasts are.
That is awful and I love it.
The Red Stair is a room-scale virtual reality game about spying on your neighbors during a time of increased paranoia and fear of communism. Play as a secret agent in 1950s New York as you unravel the relationships of the denizens of the apartment building across the street and find out who is or isn't a secret communist spy. The Red Stair is available for free on Steam for HTC Vive and Oculus Rift. I made the characters for this.
Oh, and you step into the car after Aisha and Friday stepped through, and are you surprised to find yourself not actually in a car?
Huh. I don't really know what Owen was expecting, particularly having just talked to an aide of capital R Reaper. So I don't know if he's surprised, more just kind of, oh, okay, this is happening now.
Good. That's about what I was thinking. So for Owen, instead of what Aisha and Friday saw, Owen finds himself on a flagstone courtyard. The wall of fog is a little bit closer in than it was previously, and around you, like just kind of in that fog, you can make out like the walls and parapets of a castle. The layout is familiar to you, but you can't really put your finger on it.
Okay. Just kind of looking around. I'm expecting something to come out of the fog now.
And right on cue, coming from where one of the main entry arches would be, is a shadow that moves for just kind of the edge of the fog, and a voice kind of fills the courtyard and goes, "Owen Bainbridge.
Charmed.
You've sent a lot of people my way, Owen."
The kind of bravado that he was displaying of just like, okay, this is going to be something weird, just kind of drops and gets a bit paler. Comes with the job.
I'll be honest with you, Owen. I was never much a fan of you knights.
That makes two of us then.
The voice laughs, and it's a weird laugh. Like, it doesn't really fit the environment, but at the same time, you can also just hear it ringing around that makes you think it hasn't happened around here much. The voice just, the laughter stops, and he just goes, "Oh, a knight with a sense of humor. That's interesting.
Okay, so what am I doing here?"
Well, Remember back to your classics, Owen. Who gets to go to the underworld untested?
Presumably those who aren't actually alive, unless I died walking through a limo door.
No. Your death is... Owen, your death is going to be an event. Believe me, there are a few of us on this end who have... We have that in our calendars, and we already know what kind of popcorn we're going to bring to watch. It's going to be a thing. Not that you're going to remember that, of course, but, you know, does mean no problem to tell you that right now. But no, you're still very much alive. Let's see here. Ah. I'm going to offer you something. And I'm going to do it. I don't want to be cruel, Owen, but I do have to test you. So, two people, and you see the shadow separate into two people, and there's kind of a bit of light that descends from above somewhere, and the light separates into two and lands on each shadow. And the voice goes, "These two people each have a potential gift for you. One is a practical gift. One is a gift of knowledge. Now, you have to decide which you want. Are you ready for your test?"
Okay. I guess no cheating on this one.
Let's do it. I don't really know how you would.
Well, we'll see what I can come up with. Okay.
All right,
let's
then.
Let's do it.
And the two figures step out of the shadows. I want you to describe Fiona and Connor Bainbridge.
Yep. So Fiona is kind of a shorter woman. Her hair's kind of like copper and gray in places, like very kind of erratic. There's she's wearing like this very long, like puffy woolen jumper. That's got all kind of paint splotches on it. She genuinely just looks unkempt but cheerful, in kind of a stark contrast, wearing the traditional kind of like priest collar, and kind of very severe is Connor, who is bold and definitely kind of has Owen's eyes, very kind of angular features.
And they both step forward, and Fiona holds out her arms widespread and says, "Owen, my boy."
He immediately goes to her and embraces her and says, "Oh, well, at least I get something good out of this."
She looks up at you very, very kindly, and I'm sorry, Matt, the GM, is not going to do voices here because I cannot do an Irish accent to save my life, and I'm not going to butcher your native tongue that way, Joe. So she just looks up at you and smiles, and it's kind of a sad smile. You still see the joy that always filled her, but there's just kind of a sad smile, and she just looks at you and goes, "This isn't a fair test." But, and she pats your cheek and says, "I believe in you."
Thanks. Do you know how long we have?
Oh, not long at all, but sometimes just a moment is all you need. And she looks at you just very kindly.
Owen is absolutely crying.
And from just a few feet away, you hear just a cough.
Owen's back, like, kind of straightens, and the kind of smiling through crying kind of just, like, drops. He's thought about this moment. Like, he, with the training that he has, is acutely aware that ghosts and spirits can communicate with the living. He's never, like, sought any of that out. So he thought he was prepared for what's about to happen. And he turns.
And your father is standing there, arms crossed, looking at you very... Owen interprets it as sternly. I think Connor is probably imagining that he's projecting stability or something of the sort. And he just goes, son?
At least you died in what you wanted.
He kind of shakes his head and looks at you and just goes, Still the moody teenager.
Sure, I can take that.
Maybe not. That would have started a fight before. Look, I'll make this quick and simple for you. Pick my gift. It's the one you need.
Which one's yours, then?
That's not part of the test.
Had to be right, didn't you? You always had to be fucking right.
And that's the test, isn't it? And your mom pats your arm and says, he's not wrong. The test is to choose which of us you want to inherit something from. Which of us you think you need the most another aspect of right now.
Still just looking straight at his dad. You killed her. You took her away from me. I don't want anything that you can give. So fuck off. And can I banish a spirit here?
Okay. We're not going to roll. We're not going to do any mechanics on this. Describe what you do. You're absolutely going to just put forth the magic effort to do so.
He just, from hands down at size, like kind of clenched, he raises a fist directly at his dad and individually, like, pokes each finger out, ending with the thumb, each of them ending in this kind of blue shimmering glyph. And this kind of, I guess we can't really feel cold here, but there is kind of like this wind that is kind of gathering behind him. And he just looks at his dad and says, you deserve this. You deserve so much more than this.
So the energy kind of arcs out from your hand towards your father. And it's stopped at the last second by basically just like a wall of shadow just kind of flashes up between the power and your dad. And when it's gone, your father is also gone. In that last second, just before those glyphs hit, your father's look changed. The look on his face changed. And instead of kind of the stern countenance, there was pride for a split second. And the voice comes back and just goes, well, that was one of the more dramatic ways to make a choice. All right, Fiona. You have just another minute with him. And then it's time to go. And she reaches up one hand and she turns your head back to look at her and she just goes, I love you, Owen. And for what it's worth, what I have to give you, I give you with all my heart and with all my love and with all my pride. And she kind of looks down for a second and then just goes very quietly. She adds, but I think for what's coming next. And she looks up and meets your eyes and you can see tears just running down her face. She says, I think you might have needed what your father had to give more. And she pats your cheek and just goes, you're already very much my son. You could have used a bit of his anger.
I love you, Ma. Thank you.
And she hugs you. And she hugs you very tightly. And you're hugging her back. And you feel just kind of a cool breeze move through the area. And when you open your eyes and look down, your mother's gone. And in your arms is a new sword that we're going to describe next time, because that's where we're leaving Owen. So Cole steps into the car last, and instead of seeing the inside of the limo, same as with everyone else, you find yourself in not really a wide open space. Instead, you're in a clearing. There's trees all around. You can see kind of a dark fog kind of rolling around just beyond the first ring of trees. Not too far away, you can hear waves crashing against a rocky shore. And in the middle of this clearing is something you recognize. I want you to real fast describe the ritual site.
Okay. Like you said, it was like a clearing like this. We had for weeks searched for the right kind of stones to get a circle going. They were like sea glass, that black sea glass you'll find. In a big round circle. And then we had spread fresh grave dirt all inside and then drawn runes within the dirt according to this book.
All right. And you see a shadowy shape moving through the trees towards you, down the path that you know is there. Like in the real world location, there's a path that goes there back to kind of like a little space near the highway where y'all had parked. And a voice kind of fills the area. It seems to kind of rustle through the trees and through the leaves. And it just goes, Cole, Cole, Cole. Oh, boy.
What do you want?
Whoa.
Why am I back here?
Let's take that down just a little bit. I'm not one of your tormentors, Cole.
Then who are you?
I'm the one who has to pick up the pieces. And there's a pause, and then it comes back, and the voice is a little brighter and just goes, though in fairness, that's true for just about any mortal. I have to pick up all the pieces. Did you know that I hold several doctorates in psychology? I'm proud of those.
I don't know who you are, so I know nothing about you. Why am I here? And every time he speaks, you can see that he's actually holding his breath just with taking this scene back in. He's having a hard time getting his brain to remember, oh yeah, you need to breathe.
The voice goes, Cole, you're here because you're passing from the mortal plane into the spiritual plane without the expedience of dying. And no one gets to do that without a test.
I'm going to have words with Red next time I see him.
Oh, Cole. Your demon's not on this particular ride with you. You'll find him on the other end when you get there safe and sound. No, this time it's just you and a shape steps out of the woods. And a, well, I don't want to call him a loved one. Maybe victim is the right word. And I want you to describe John Sullivan.
John is not all that tall. Very skinny dude. In fact, he's got thin glasses, thin metal or shiny metal rimmed glasses, and he's got a long mohawk, kind of like Cole, except, well, now more like Cole in that it's all floppy. He rarely ever put it up. It's just a big floppy mane on the top of his head.
All right. And John steps kind of into the clearing, just goes, "Hey, Cole." And he's not making eye contact with you.
And Cole's literally going to fall on his butt and start laughing and fish for a cigarette. Yeah, not one of my tormentors. Hi, Johnny. What's up, man? And he lights a cigarette.
Johnny just kind of shoves his hands into some pockets and doesn't look up. He still has not made eye contact with you. And just goes, just like he just shrugs his shoulders and just goes, "Oh, you know, I'm dead." And when he does look up, his eyes are solid black. And it's like something's moving behind them. He just goes, "Unlike you."
I'm sorry.
Oh.
I tried.
And Johnny straightens up. And as he does so, his outfit kind of changes. His pants turn into shiny leather pants. His top is replaced by a cut-off t-shirt and a leather vest over top of it. The mohawk straightens itself up. The glasses just kind of fade off of his face, and he cracks his neck and he looks at you and just goes, "Oh, Cole, you're not nearly sorry enough." And he starts to kind of shimmer a little bit, and more Johnnies are stepping out of him until they're ringing the entire clearing around you. And the voice comes back and just goes, "All right, Cole." And there's just kind of this note of weariness in his voice. And it continues, it says, "Here's the thing. Sometimes unwanted customers come through my realm. The ones that I can handle, I do so. I have a whole pit where I can throw them down with my ungrateful uncles and aunts. But sometimes they have enough energy on their own to make such an effort on my part uncomfortable. And this one seems to have inherited Johnny's grudge when it took him over, and it wants you dead, Cole. So unlike some of your friends, you're going to have a pretty straight up test. Your test is to survive and to not kill the real Johnny. Get that thing out of him." Same deal as kind of the others. We're not going to do a whole lot of rolling here. A lot of this is just narrative. So I want you to tell me what Cole is going to do.
All right. So I think the first thing Cole's going to do is drop back into like a defensive kind of fighting stance. And he's going to have his palm light up. And he's like looking around, just kind of trying to get a view of all the Johnnies at once, which I feel like I'm ringed at this point. So it's basically me spinning in a circle, just trying to keep everybody at bay. I don't want to hurt you. I'm not even supposed to hurt you. Let's talk.
Oh, Cole. You're not supposed to hurt Johnny. I'm not Johnny anymore. I'm what you brats were trying to bring forth, even if you didn't know it. Just because that little tag-along jumped into your head doesn't mean that's what you were summoning. No, 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 no. I'm something different.
Fuck you for preying on kids. And
it just laughs.
Now, I've got to ask, is it all completely synchronous? Do all the Johnnies laugh at the same time? Or
It's a little... Give me a roll.
Okay.
Sell me on one of your just basic stats. Sell me on one of those that would be how Cole would be able to tell if they were a little off.
You know what? I'm going to pitch cool to you because this is a very stressful situation. So
okay.
For him to notice something like that, he's going to have to maintain.
Yeah, absolutely. Roll it up.
It's a partial success. That's an 8.
Okay. So they're not all synchronous. They are pretty, there's kind of a ripple effect, but you can see one that seems, you can see a couple that are more out of sync than the others. So you can kind of narrow it down to, it's one of these three.
One of these three is...
Is probably the real Johnny.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, I guess at this point, you know what? I'm going to go a little bit inside my own head.
Okay.
Because the last time that something real bad happened, I had my passenger just wanting to take right on over for me. So, how do I handle this?
It takes a minute. It hasn't taken a minute before. It takes a minute. And eventually, your demon, like, sounding like it's from far off, just goes, yeah, I'm not actually riding along right now. I kind of got booted by... And then there's just kind of static for a second. Okay, can't say that. Cool. Cool, 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 cool. Listen, you've got... this sucks. Okay. I'm not your only source of power. You have other power. Just kinda...
And you can be separated from me is what you just told me.
Right now, I can't. Right now, it would probably kill you. But yeah, down the road, probably. But also, I kind of want you to live through this so that I don't get thrown back into the pit. So, reach down deep, find the part of you that scares you to death, and let it out of the box. And it's like a phone clicks on a receiver.
And with that, Cole's going to go white. Because he doesn't want to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And he's actually... going to kind of hunch down for a second, and then he's going to access that part that everybody has, that part that you can acknowledge is there, but you don't really want to be part of you.
Mm-hmm.
And for Cole, a lot of that is where he tries to lock a lot of his guilt and his anger and his pain. Everything right here is residual. But he's gonna let the floodgates go.
So here's what we're gonna do real fast. Okay. Here, Cole. we're going to have a chat with this other version of you that you keep locked away.
Okay.
And then we're going to describe what happened outside at the very end. Okay. So kind of everything fades from your view, the clearing, all that fades, and you're in just like a black space with a light, with just a light shining down on you. And you're there. Cole is there in the exact clothes he was wearing before. Maybe just like hyped up a little bit more, like Cole's ideal of what he would wear that might not be 100% feasible with actual real world fashion. And stepping into the light directly across from you is a different version of Cole. Instead of kind of the heavy punk aesthetic, it's just casual blue jeans and a nicely fitted button-down shirt. It's untucked. He's got a blazer over top of it. His hair's grown out and kind of pulled back into a ponytail. And he just looks at you and just goes, "Wow. So, I'd say there, but for the grace of God go I, but kind of reversed, isn't it, buddy?"
"For fuck's sake, am I inceptioning myself?"
"Cole, me, I'm who you could have been if you didn't fucking run away all the goddamn time."
"Oh, so you're Christmas past."
"No.
I get it.
I'm Christmas future, asshole. If you want it."
"Okay, and drop some knowledge on me."
Taps the side of his head and just goes, "First of all, I don't have a goddamn demon spook in my brain running herd on me, making me see dead people that aren't even there. You do realize you just gave this demon a free ride in a human power nexus, right? God, there's only one other force on Earth," and he just like throws his hands out, "on Earth that would have been worse than a demon. And you don't even know the name of them yet."
"What?"
"Huh. You're going to find out eventually. Listen, I don't have a lot of time. I'm dealing with your Johnny problem. Okay. Couple things real fast. One, all these hunter friends of yours, stay close to them. Two, and this one's going to be hard, stop talking to fake people."
"What?"
"She died. She's gone."
"But I go all the time. It out behind the house."
"Yeah. Where no one else can see her. Where no one else can verify it. Where no one will think you're a crazy person talking to the air."
"So that's just, that's all me?"
"No, it's like 50-50 you and the demon. It's more like he's playing on your guilt." Which brings me nicely to the third thing. And he just like bows his head for a minute and rubs his forehead and just goes, "Ah, okay. This one's gonna suck. More than anything else, this is the worst one. You have to forgive us."
And Cole's gonna cry. I know what you're saying's true. But I can't. I sleep, I see Johnny, I see Cherry. And when I don't see them, I hear the demon. And he's going to grab his hair and like push it up out of his face.
And this other version of Cole is like right up close to you now, and he's got his arms on your shoulders, and he's just looking at you. And he just goes, "I remember. And you're gonna beat it." the demon just told you that you can beat it. And guess what, buddy? Guess what?
What?
His eyes start to glow. Like with an actual, there's actual just like power radiating out of this other coal. And he just goes, "You're going to be amazing.
Help me."
"I can't, buddy. I already went through it. You have to walk that road that leads you to me. But I can't give you a nudge in the right direction. Don't talk to Milo, because people seem to not like him. Talk to Bainbridge, or Cardoza, maybe even better, even though he's kind of already got an apprentice. Talk to one of them, and tell them everything. For once in your life, tell someone everything. And here's the big one, buddy, and I can't say this enough. Forgive us."
"All right. I feel like we've got work to do." And I'm going to hug alternate me.
Uh-huh.
"I'm going to forgive us."
There's a ding. Like a bell just ringing loud and clear in the building. In a big echoey building, you just hear this boom. And the other version of you is gone, and the vision just reverts back to the clearing. And there, I want you to describe what the aftermath of Cole using his natural abilities looks like. Because there's only one person left standing besides Cole, and that's Johnny.
Assuming that they don't fade away when they're torn apart?
They don't, and there's still some lingering power radiating out from Cole.
Okay, so this looks like a horror scene. There are ripped up, littered Johnny copies all over the clearing now. And Cole actually is in midair, suspended by shadow-like arms that are coming out from his back and just holding him up. He almost looks like a spider or Dr. Octopus, if you want to, with these tendrils coming out from him that look like hardened, shiny shadow.
And the real Johnny is just kind of... His clothes are back to normal. The mohawk has fallen limply down. And he's just like slumped against a tree. And he's just looking at you in awe, Cole. And he just goes, "Wow, yeah. Sherry and I knew you were the strongest of us, but wow, man. Hey, thanks for getting that thing out of me."
And Cole will kind of float over with the tentacles just kind of wheeling him or projecting him over that way, and he's going to grab Johnny's hand and pull him up. "I miss you, man. We'll meet again."
Johnny smiles and just looks at you and just goes, "Anything you want me to tell Sherry?"
"That I'm sorry. And I'm going to live for all of us."
Johnny's smile becomes a genuine one. Something that Cole hadn't seen in years. And he just goes, "Yeah, we know. Hey, we're going to keep an eye on you, okay?"
"Good. I think I'm going to need it."
And the voice comes back and just goes, "Well done, Cole. Don't get too cocky yet." And kind of that connection to these new powers just kind of like turns off, and Cole just drops to the ground. And the voice just goes, "Well, good test, buddy. Thanks for dealing with that for me. I don't yeah, oh, yeah, off you go. And there's a clap. And it all flashes white. And that's where we're going to leave Cole.
The Lost Library is a production of the Fifth Draw family of podcasts and can be found at fifthdraw.com. You can email us at lostlibrary@fifthdraw.com or follow us on Twitter @LostLibraryCast.